cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be.
Welcome to Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. Bill, we need to talk about a television event that's being revived. It's coming, as I understand, it's going to be on major networks, and it's a revival of Cosmos, one of the most popular series in the past, which was hosted by Carl Sagan. Enormously popular. Had tremendous impact on a lot of people and still does to this day, even after his death. One of the people that he really influenced, who he was a mentor to, was Professor Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's an astrophysicist. And Professor Tyson will be reviving and hosting this new Cosmos series. Did you watch any of the old series with Carl Sagan?
Oh, yes, I did. I thought Sagan was a charming host. He was so intriguing, and he presented things in such a way that made it so interesting. I thought the program was very well produced, even though I disagreed so fundamentally with his naturalistic point of view.
His main theme that he repeated so often in this TV series and also in his public lectures is that the universe is all there is, all there was, all there will ever be. So that leaves no room for God, for supernatural.
Yes, in fact, the cosmos, which he always spelled with a capital C, becomes a sort of God substitute. In the Bible, God is described as he who was and is and will be. And he substitutes in the place of God the cosmos, which is all there ever was, is, or will be, which is a statement of atheism. And this isn't proven. There's no argument given for it. It's definitional for him. This is the point from which he starts. He assumes that atheism is true and then works out the consequences. And I thought what was interesting with Sagan is that he had an almost religious awe of the cosmos. It really did become a sort of God surrogate, an object of religious awe and wonder and transcendence. So for Sagan, the cosmos was more than just the universe. It really was a kind of substitute deity. And the wonder and awe at the cosmos took the form of a kind of cosmic religion.
Reminds me of a verse that Paul said that people would worship the creature rather than the creator. In other words, the things that were created rather than the creator who created them.
Right. The creation is something that ought to fill us with awe and wonder at its beauty and greatness and complexity. But that should redound to the glory of the God who designed and created it, rather than end simply in the created product itself.
By the way, looking at my notes here, this new program, will air on Fox and the National Geographic Channel. So it's going to be prime time and get quite a bit of coverage.
Now, do you know if Professor Tyson shares the religious or philosophical presuppositions that Sagan had, or will this be a more objective and neutral survey of contemporary cosmology?
My understanding is that he's right in line with Sagan's naturalistic philosophy.
What people are really after is, what is my stance on religion or spirituality or God? And I would say if I had to find a word that came closest, it would be agnostic. Agnostic.
The producer, Seth MacFarlane, he's produced Family Guy and American Dad. He will be executive producer of this. He's an ardent atheist. And so this is kind of his baby as well. You can bet that the philosophy will lean one particular way.
That's so unfortunate, Kevin, because I think what this does is continue the sort of cultural prejudice that science and an appreciation of the wonder of the cosmos lends support to naturalism or to atheism. And the naturalist gets to posture himself as the one who is the true advocate and aficionado of science, when in fact theists have been and ought to be ardent supporters of natural science and the exploration of the cosmos.
Well, Bill, what I'd like to do is just go through some clips here and have you comment on them from Professor Tyson in his interview with Bill Moyers recently. Let's listen to a couple of clips from this.
If God is the mystery of the universe, these mysteries, we're tackling these mysteries one by one. If you're going to stay religious at the end of the conversation, God has to be more to you than just where science has yet to tread.
In other words, God of the gaps.
Exactly. Like that's the old God of the gaps gambit again, claiming that God is used to stop up the gaps in scientific knowledge and get squeezed out as science advances, which is a caricature of the proper relationship between science and theology. Where do these intelligent people get this misconception of the relationship between science and theology? People who have been involved in the science and theology dialogue for decades now have been emphasizing that the relations between science and theology are a lot more sophisticated and nuanced than this simple God of the gaps idea that God plugs up the area of scientific ignorance, and yet the other side continues to perpetuate this myth.
Bill Moyers continues in the interview.
Do you give people who make this case that that was the beginning and that there had to be something that provoked the beginning, do you give them an A at least for trying to reconcile faith and reason?
I don't think they're reconcilable.
What do you mean?
Well, so let me say that differently. All efforts that have been invested by brilliant people of the past have failed at that exercise. They just fail. And so I don't, the track record is so poor that going forward I have essentially zero confidence, near zero confidence, that there will be fruitful things to emerge from the effort to reconcile them. So, for example, if you knew nothing about science, and you read, say, the Bible, the Old Testament, which in Genesis is an account of nature. That's what that is. And I said to you, give me your description of the natural world based only on this. You would say the world was created in 6 days and that stars are just little points of light, much lesser than the sun. And in fact, they can fall out of the sky, right? Because that's what happens during the Revelation. One of the signs that the second coming is that the stars will fall out of the sky and land on Earth. So to even write that means you don't know what those things are. You have no concept of what the actual universe is. So everybody who tried to make proclamations about the physical universe based on Bible passages got the wrong answer. So what happened was when science discovers things, and you want to stay religious, or you want to continue to believe that the Bible is unerring, what you would do is, you would say, well, let me go back to the Bible and reinterpret it. Then you'd say things like, oh, they didn't really mean that literally, they meant that figuratively. So this whole sort of reinterpretation of how figurative the poetic passages of the Bible are came after science showed that this is not how things unfolded. And so the educated religious people are perfectly fine with that. It's the fundamentalists who want to say that the Bible is the literal truth of God and want to see the Bible as a science textbook who are knocking on the science doors of the schools trying to put that content in the science. Enlightened religious people are not behaving that way. They're saying, yes, science is cool, we're good with that, and use the Bible to get your spiritual enlightenment and your emotional fulfillment.
Bill Moyers begins by saying, you know, there are a lot of people, philosophers, who say that the Big Bang is a good evidence for God, which we say as well. And can't you at least give them an A for trying to reconcile the two, religion and science?
And he doesn't answer that question specifically. He just asserts that faith and reason are irreconcilable.
Yeah, right.
Now, that's just an incredible claim. He doesn't even define his terms as to what he means by faith and reason. I just can't even imagine how someone could say that a person could not trust in or make a commitment to something that his reason tells him is true. So he needs to define his terms if he's going to make such a sweeping claim. What he goes on to talk about is that we shouldn't take the Bible to be a scientific textbook, that if you do so, you will be wrong in your science. Now, that's not the same as faith and reason. How in the world does he equate reading the Bible as a science book as saying faith and reason are irreconcilable? It doesn't match up. And what I would say with regard to his claim about the Bible is that he is making the assumption that the purpose of the Bible is to convey scientific information. And that's an assumption which one could call into question. For example, I think there are good reasons in the text itself of Genesis to think that it does not contemplate a 6 consecutive 24-hour day creation. And we know that stars falling from the sky is part of the imagery of apocalyptic literature. This is a way in which the Jewish person would convey tremendously cataclysmic and important events by using language that is symbolic in that way. So,
yeah, and the language would even allow for meteors and other bodies, foreign bodies that are falling. It's also interpreted stars, but it can be broader than that. And so even if it's describing something falling, it's not talking about a white dwarf or the stars that we're familiar with falling.
Yes, that's certainly true. Even today, we talk about shooting stars, don't we?
Sure.
Phenomenally. But yeah. More fundamentally than that, though, Kevin, I think that that's just a failure to understand apocalyptic literature. Look at Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost, where he says that what the people in Jerusalem are witnessing is a fulfillment of the prophecy of Joel about how the sun will be darkened and the moon will turn to blood and things of that sort. Well, there weren't any astronomical events going on like that on the day of Pentecost. This is apocalyptic language to say that these are significant events. Even today, we'll say something was earth-shattering. Well, we don't mean that there literally occurred an earthquake. It's imagery. And it is simply false. It shows Dr. Tyson's ignorance when he says that this reinterpretation was forced by modern science and came only afterward. That's simply historically incorrect. St. Augustine, who was writing in the early 400s, proposed an interpretation of Genesis 1, according to which the creation involved God's putting seminal seeds, so to speak, into creation, which then over time would develop into full-fledged animals and plants of various sorts. But he did not hold to 6-day, 24-hour creationist view, and neither did lots of other Jews and Christians. This is 1,500 years before Darwin and the theory of evolution came on the scene. So it's simply historically incorrect to say that understanding these narratives in figurative ways is something that came after modern science developed.
Dr. Tyson needs to be told these things. I hope he listens to this podcast, because you know this is going to come up in the series.
Yeah.
And it could just cause misunderstanding to those who are seeking, and to those who are people of faith, confusion with this false dichotomy and these wars, allegedly, that have been going on, that science always wins. And he, Dr. Tyson, likes to see himself on the winning side of this. Science is an enterprise and so on.
Yes, and he didn't address what you said Moyers asked was, doesn't the Big Bang theory lend support to the biblical doctrine of creation, that in the beginning God created the universe? Well, that prediction at least has seemed to be verified by modern science. I think modern science is more open to the existence of a creator and designer of the universe than at any time in recent history.
Let's continue with the interview then.
I have known serious religious people, not fundamentalists, who were scared when Carl Sagan opened his series with the words,
"The cosmos is all that is, or ever was, or ever will be."
That scared them, because they interpret that to mean, then if this is it, there's nothing else, no God and no life after.
For religious people, many people say, well, God is within you, or God, there are ways that people have shaped this, rather than God is an old gray-bearded man in the clouds. So if God is within you, what I'm sure Carl would say, in you, in your mind, and we can measure the neurosynaptic firings when you have a religious experience. We can tell you where that's happening, when it's happening, what you're feeling like at the time. So your mind, of course, is still within the cosmos.
What I heard him say was that enlightened people do not turn to the Bible to be a science textbook, but turn to it for spiritual reasons, their spiritual life. That seems to me to be correct and fine. And so what I'm puzzled at is, why does he think then that faith and reason are irreconcilable? Why does he think that these so-called enlightened religious people are somehow intellectually incompetent? Because he claims faith and reason are not reconcilable. But what about these enlightened people? Isn't faith and reason reconciled in the view of the spiritually enlightened person? I don't like that language. It sounds elitist.
Yeah.
But he's the one that, this is his terminology. And I would like to know, does he think that faith and reason are irreconcilable for someone who doesn't fall into what he calls a fundamentalist? That is, someone who insists on taking the Bible literally and doesn't understand things like apocalyptic imagery or figurative language.
Yeah. I've heard people say wooden literalism rather than literally. It's appropriate to take the Bible literally where it intends to be taken literally, and take it metaphorically where it intends to be taken metaphorically. An extreme version of wooden literalism would say that the right hand of God is mentioned, that God has fingers and fingernails and fingerprints, you know, and that would be a wooden literalism. And he's actually picking on fundamentalists, as he says here, on taking the Bible that way, perhaps a wooden literalism.
Well, I mean, in fact, Kevin, even those who would classify themselves as fundamentalists don't take the Bible literally in every respect. They understand the differences between different types of literature. When the psalmist says, let the trees of the wood clap their hands before the Lord, the fundamentalist doesn't think that the psalmist is teaching that trees have hands. He understands poetry and the genre of poetry. And so you, as you say, this is the whole project of hermeneutics. How do you interpret literature, whether biblical or extra-biblical, properly? And one of the principles of good hermeneutics is you need to first understand the genre or the type of literature that you're reading in order to understand whether it intends to be taken literally or not. And when you get to apocalyptic literature, like the book of Revelation, for example, even fundamentalists do not think that the book of Revelation teaches that there will literally be nine-headed monsters that will come up out of the sea and begin to devour people. They take these typically to be alliances of political states or powers that are aligned against God and so forth. They recognize symbols, that the red dragon isn't some sort of a beast with scales, that it's a satanic symbol or image. So he's being very unsophisticated in his grasp of hermeneutics here.
Seems to be two main things there, Bill. First of all, God as just an idea in your head, not really existing objectively, but a source of comfort. And even Bill Moyers would want to be sympathetic with that. And then second of all, is there anything objective to your faith? Is there a referent to that which you put your place your faith in? And since that's not the case, then get it out of the science
class. Well, you notice, Kevin, the way these issues are run together in this muddy, unclear fashion by Tyson. He leaps from one issue to another without any kind of logically coherent connection. Notice first the false dichotomy that he gives us between either God is within you and is purely a subjective idea of your mind, or else he's an old gray-bearded man in the sky. Neither of those options represents classical theism or the traditional view that Christians have held. So it's a false dichotomy right from the beginning. I think that those who objected to Sagan's statement that the cosmos is all there ever was, is, or will be are quite right in saying that if that's true, then God does not exist. That is the assumption of atheism on Sagan's part, and we therefore would be within our rights to demand what rational argument he has for thinking that. Now, Tyson is quite happy to say, well, God is just in your mind, and he thinks, therefore, you can give a neurosynaptic analysis of religious experience. Now, I would point out, Kevin, that my idea of Neil deGrasse Tyson is in my mind. And you can give a neurosynaptic analysis of my experience of seeing Neil deGrasse Tyson. Does that mean that therefore he is illusory, that he's just an object in my consciousness, as you say, that there is no external referent for that experience? Well, obviously not. This is a terrible argument to think that because you can analyze neurologically my experiences of an object, that therefore the object isn't real or objective. That's a ridiculous argument and would ultimately lead to solipsism, right? The external world and everyone around me are all unreal and everything's an idea in my mind. I don't know if Tyson is a solipsist, but I would hope not. And then, having described this absurd position, he then starts talking about how he supports constitutional free exercise of religion. That's wonderful. I'm glad he does. But don't let it into the classroom of science. Well, where did that come from? How does defending the objectivity of God's existence and that it's not just an idea in your mind lead to the claim that we're trying to introduce this into science classes? It's just guilt by association. He's blurring issues here. This is not representing clear thought, I think.
Dr. Tyson is in his element when he's talking about dark matter and astrophysics. But Bill, for the life of me, when he starts getting into theology and philosophy of religion, religion and science, reasonable faith, he sounds like an obnoxious kid in a Sunday school taking on the little old lady Sunday school teacher about God having a gray beard and God's just an idea. And what about these stars and Come on.
Yeah, it really does, Kevin. I mean, I think this just illustrates what we've seen so often in the past, is that someone who is brilliant in his narrow area of specialization and begins to pontificate on matters of religion and philosophy will often be no different from the village atheist who stands on the street corner and rants against God. That's really the level of this discourse that we have been treated to so far in this podcast.
Bill Moyers then brings up this point.
But do you have any sympathy for people who seem to feel safe in the vastness of the universe you describe in your show if they can infer a personal God who makes it more hospitable to them, who cares for them?
In this, what we tell ourselves is a free country, which means you should have freedom of thought. I don't care what you think. I just don't. Go think whatever you want. Go ahead. Think that there's one God, two gods, 10 gods, or no gods. That is what it means to live in a free country. The problem arises is if you have a religious philosophy that is not based in objective realities that you then want to put in the science classroom. Then I'm going to stand there and say, no, I'm not going to allow you in the science classroom. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm just telling you in the science class, you're not doing science. This is not science. Keep it out. That's when I stand up. Otherwise, go ahead. I'm not telling you how to think.
I think you must realize that some people are going to go to your show at the planetarium and they're going to say, aha, those scientists have discovered God, because God, dark matter, is what holds this universe together.
I suppose he's right in saying that there is a tendency on the part of some religious people to say the unknown is God. But I think there is a tendency, Kevin, equally on the other side, to caricature religion in this way. I don't find among my colleagues in science, philosophy, or theology advocating God of the gaps. It is the people on the other side who think that if God exists, he is the God of the gaps. So this is really their caricature, not something that intelligent Christians are advocating.
And there tends to be an urge for people, especially religious people, to assert that across that boundary into the unknown lies the handiwork of God. This shows up a lot. Newton even said it. He had his laws of gravity and motion, and he was explaining the moon and the planet. He was there. He doesn't mention God for any of that. And then he gets to the limits of what his equations can calculate. So I can't quite figure this out. Maybe God steps in and makes it right every now and then. That's where he invoked God.
And with regard to Newton again, I'm sorry, Professor Tyson, but you don't know your Newton. If you read the Scholium to Newton's Principia Mathematica Philosophiae Naturalis, Newton founds his doctrine of absolute time and space, which is the grounding of his laws of motion, in the eternity and omnipresence of God. God for Newton was not just a gap filler. It was a presupposition. It was the framework of his theistic worldview, which then flowed forth in his laws of motion and his views of time and space. So again, you see this caricaturing of people to make them appear to be folks who are advocating God of the gaps, when in fact that is an inaccurate characterization.
Says there's always going to be a scientific frontier. And when we hit this frontier, people in the past, he accuses Newton of it, Ptolemy, others, saying, well, this is as far as we can go, and then God does the rest. But since the frontier keeps getting further and further out as we make discoveries, that keeps, again, closing the gaps. What I would like to ask on that, Bill, is would it be appropriate to say that theism makes certain predictions about what will be discovered? In other words, if Christian theism is true, for example, then there will not be a discovery of a natural cause of the space-time universe.
I think that you could say that with respect to the origin of the cosmos, because there, as you say, you're getting into metaphysics and not physics. There's no reason to think that you couldn't have, in principle, a scientific description of the universe at every moment of time right back to the beginning. But that wouldn't answer the question, well, why is there a universe at all? But I think it's important to see, Kevin, that the ways in which science and theology relate are much more nuanced than that. As I explained in my dialogue with Lawrence Krauss in Australia last year, science and theology are related in numerous, very nuanced ways. For example, theology provides the conceptual framework in which science can exist and flourish. It does this by grounding assumptions that science has to make. One might say to Professor Tyson, we make them by faith, which science cannot itself justify. Things like the orderly nature of the external world, the laws of logic, the validity of inductive reasoning, the moral values that are used in scientific research and writing. There's a whole host of these extra scientific assumptions without which science could not even exist, but which are part and parcel of a Christian worldview. And that is part of the reason, at least, why modern science was birthed in the Christian West, rather than in the Orient or in Africa, where they lacked that kind of conceptual framework for the birth and flourishing of modern science.
Let's continue with the end of the interview with Bill Moyers.
What he did was he didn't invoke Zeus to account for the rock that he's standing on or the air he's breathing. It was this point of mystery. And in gets invoked God. This, over time, has been described by philosophers as the God of the gaps. If that's where you're going to put your God in this world, then God is an ever-receding pocket of scientific ignorance. If that's how you're going to invoke God, if God is the mystery of the universe, these mysteries, we're tackling these mysteries one by one. If you're going to stay religious at the end of the conversation, God has to be more to you than just where science has yet to tread. So to the person who says, maybe dark matter is God, if the only reason why you're saying it's because it's a mystery, then get ready to have that undone.
Well, Bill, I can agree with a lot of that. I think you probably can too.
Absolutely. He says that if that's where you put God, the undiscovered, then he's ever receding. God has to be more to you than where science has yet to tread. Absolutely. And so what I want to know, though, from Tyson is, for the person whose God is more than just where science is yet to tread, is that irrational? Is faith and reason irreconcilable, as he claimed? I do not understand that opening salvo against the rationality of religious faith. For the person who doesn't believe in the God of the gaps, whose God is more than the God of the gaps, how is that person's faith and reason not reconcilable? How is that person irrational? And nothing he said supports that opening, bold claim. Instead, he's attacked a caricature.